too strong. The same individual stated that it was well known at IRI that Kalimnik had links to the Russian government. Footnote 867. Jonathan Hawker, a British national who was a public relations consultant at FTI Consulting, worked with DMI on a public relations campaign for Yanukovych. After Hawker's work for DMI ended, Kalimnik contacted Hawker about working for a Russian government entity on a public relations project that would promote, in Western and Ukrainian media, Russia's position on its 2014 invasion of Crimea. Footnote 868. Gates suspected that Kalimnik was a, quote, spy, unquote, a view that he shared with Manafort, Hawker, and Alexander van der Zwaan. Footnote 869. An attorney who had worked with DMI on a report for the Ukrainian Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Footnote 870. Redaction, investigative technique. B. Contacts during Paul Manafort's time with the Trump campaign. 1. Paul Manafort joins the campaign. Manafort served on the Trump campaign from late March to August 19, 2016. On March 29, 2016, the campaign announced that Manafort would serve as the campaign's, quote, convention manager, unquote. Footnote 871. On May 19, 2016, Manafort was promoted to campaign chairman and chief strategist, and Gates, who had been assisting Manafort on the campaign, was appointed deputy campaign chairman. Footnote 872. Thomas Barrick and Roger Stone both recommended Manafort to candidate Trump. Footnote 873. In early 2016, at Manafort's request, Barrick suggested to Trump that Manafort join the campaign to manage the Republican convention. Footnote 874. Stone had worked with Manafort from approximately 1980 until the mid-1990s through various consulting and lobbying firms. Manafort met Trump in 1982 when Trump hired the Black Manafort Stone and Kelly lobbying firm. Footnote 875. Over the years, Manafort saw Trump at political and social events in New York City and at Stone's wedding, and Trump requested VIP status at the 1998 and 1996 Republican conventions worked by Manafort. Footnote 876. According to Gates, in March 2016, Manafort traveled to Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida to meet with Trump. Trump hired him at that time. Footnote 877. Manafort agreed to work on the campaign without pay. Manafort had no meaningful income at this point in time, but resuscitating his domestic political campaign career could be financially beneficial in the future. Gates reported that Manafort intended, if Trump won the presidency, to remain outside the administration and monetize his relationship with the administration. Footnote 878. 2. Paul Manafort's campaign period contacts. Immediately upon joining the campaign, Manafort directed Gates to prepare for his review separate memoranda addressed to Deripaska, Akhmedov, Serhiy Yovichkin, and Boris Kolesnikov. Footnote 879. The last three being Ukrainian oligarchs who were senior opposition bloc officials. Footnote 880. The memoranda described Manafort's appointment to the Trump campaign and indicated his willingness to consult on Ukrainian politics in the future. On March 30, 2016, Gates emailed the memoranda and a press release announcing Manafort's appointment to Kalimnik for translation and dissemination. Footnote 881. Manafort later followed up with Kalimnik to ensure his messages had been delivered, emailing on April 11, 2016 to ask whether Kalimnik had shown, quote, our friends, unquote, the media coverage of his new role. Footnote 882. Kalimnik replied, quote, absolutely, every article, unquote. Manafort further asked, quote, how do we use to get whole? Has OVD, Oleg Vladimirovich Deripaska, operation seen, unquote? Kalimnik wrote back the same day, quote, yes, I have been sending everything to Viktor, Boyarkin, Deripaska's deputy, who has been forwarding the coverage directly to OVD. Unquote. Footnote 883. Gates reported that Manafort said that being hired on the campaign would be, quote, good for business, unquote, and increased the likelihood that Manafort would be paid the approximately $2 million he was owed for previous political consulting work in Ukraine. Footnote 884. Gates also explained to the office that Manafort thought his role on the campaign could help, quote, confirm, unquote, that Deripaska had dropped the Pericles lawsuit, and that Gates believed Manafort sent polling data to Deripaska, as discussed further below, so that Deripaska would not move forward with his lawsuit against Manafort. Footnote 885. Gates further stated that Deripaska wanted a visa to the United States, that Deripaska could believe that having Manafort in a position inside the campaign or administration might be helpful to Deripaska, and that Manafort's relationship with Trump could help Deripaska in other ways as well. Footnote 886. Gates stated, however, that Manafort never told him anything specific about what, if anything, Manafort might be offering Deripaska. Footnote 887. Gates also reported that Manafort instructed him in April 2016, or early May 2016, to send Kilimnik campaign internal polling data and other updates so that Kilimnik in turn could share it with Ukrainian oligarchs. Footnote 888. Gates understood that the information would also be shared with Deripaska. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 889. Gates reported to the office that he did not know why Manafort wanted him to send polling information, but Gates thought it was a way to showcase Manafort's work, and Manafort wanted to open doors to jobs after the Trump campaign ended. Footnote 890. Gates said that Manafort's instruction included sending internal polling data prepared for the Trump campaign by pollster Tony Fabrizio. Footnote 891. Fabrizio had worked with Manafort for years and was brought into the campaign by Manafort. Gates stated that, in accordance with Manafort's instruction, he periodically sent Kilimnik polling data via WhatsApp. Gates then deleted the communications on a daily basis. Footnote 892. Gates further told the office that, after Manafort left the campaign in mid-August, Gates sent Kilimnik polling data less frequently, and that the data he sent was more publicly available information and less internal data. Footnote 893. Gates' account about polling data is consistent. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 94, with multiple emails that Kilimnik sent to U.S. associates and press contacts between late July and mid-August of 2016. Those emails referenced, quote, internal polling, unquote, described the status of the Trump campaign and Manafort's role in it, and assessed Trump's prospects for victory. Footnote 895. Manafort did not acknowledge instructing Gates to send Kilimnik internal data. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 896. The office also obtained contemporaneous emails that shed light on the purpose of the communications with Deripaska and that are consistent with Gates' account. For example, in response to a July 7, 2016 email from a Ukrainian reporter about Manafort's failed Deripaska-backed investment, Manafort asked Kilimnik whether there had been any movement on, quote, this issue with our friend, unquote. Footnote 897. Gates stated that our friend likely referred to Deripaska, footnote 898, and Manafort told the office that the, quote, issue, unquote, and, quote, our biggest interest, unquote, as stated below, was a solution to the Deripaska-Pericles issue, footnote 899. Kilimnik replied, I am carefully optimistic on the question of our biggest interest. Our friend, Boyarkin, said there is lately significantly more attention to the campaign in his boss's, Deripaska's, mind, and he will be most likely looking for ways to reach out to you pretty soon, understanding all the time sensitivity. I am more than sure that it will be resolved, and we will get back to the original relationship with V's boss, Deripaska. Footnote 900. 8 minutes later, Manafort replied that Kilimnik should tell Boyarkin's boss, a reference to Deripaska, quote, that if he needs private briefings, we can accommodate, unquote. footnote 901. Manafort has alleged to the office that he was willing to brief Deripaska only on public campaign matters and gave an example, why Trump selected Mike Pence as the vice presidential running mate, footnote 902. Manafort said he never gave Deripaska a briefing, footnote 903. Manafort noted that if Trump won, Deripaska would want to use Manafort to advance whatever interests Deripaska had in the United States and elsewhere, footnote 904. 3. Paul Manafort's two campaign period meetings with Konstantin Kilimnik in the United States. Manafort twice met with Kilimnik in person during the campaign period, once in May and again in August 2016. The first meeting took place on May 7, 2016, in New York City, footnote 905. In the days leading to the meeting, Kilimnik had been working to gather information about the political situation in Ukraine. That included information gleaned from a trip that former Party of Regions official Yuri Boyka had recently taken to Moscow, a trip that likely included meetings between Boyka and high-ranking Russian officials, footnote 906. Kilimnik then traveled to Washington, D.C. on or about May 5, 2016. While in Washington, Kilimnik had prearranged meetings with State Department employees, footnote 907. Late on the evening of May 6, Gates arranged for Kilimnik to take a 3 a.m. train to meet Manafort in New York for breakfast on May 7, footnote 908. According to Manafort, during the meeting, he and Kilimnik talked about events in Ukraine, and Manafort briefed Kilimnik on the Trump campaign, expecting Kilimnik to pass the information back to individuals in Ukraine and elsewhere, footnote 909. Manafort stated that opposition bloc members recognized Manafort's position on the campaign was an opportunity, but Kilimnik did not ask for anything, footnote 910. Kilimnik spoke about a plan for Boyka to boost election participation in the eastern zone of Ukraine, which was the base for the opposition bloc, footnote 911. Kilimnik returned to Washington, D.C. right after the meeting with Manafort. Manafort met with Kilimnik a second time at the Grand Havana Club in New York City on the evening of August 2, 2016. The events leading to the meeting are as follows. On July 28, 2016, Kilimnik flew from Kiev to Moscow, footnote 912. The next day, Kilimnik wrote to Manafort requesting that they meet, using coded language about a conversation he had that day, footnote 913. In an email with the subject line, Black Caviar, Kilimnik wrote, I met today with the guy who gave you your biggest black caviar jar several years ago. We spent about 5 hours talking about his story, and I have several important messages from him to you. He asked me to go and brief you on our conversation. I said I have to run it by you first, but in principle I am prepared to do it. It has to do about the future of his country, and is quite interesting. Footnote 914. Manafort identified, quote, the guy who gave you your biggest black caviar jar, unquote, as Yanukovych. He explained that, in 2010, he and Yanukovych had lunch to celebrate the recent presidential election. Yanukovych gave Manafort a large jar of black caviar that was worth approximately $30,000 to $40,000, footnote 915. Manafort's identification of Yanukovych as, quote, the guy who gave you your biggest black caviar jar, unquote, is consistent with Kilimnik being in Moscow, where Yanukovych resided, when Kilimnik wrote, quote, I met today with the guy, unquote, and with a December 2016 email in which Kilimnik referred to Yanukovych as, quote, BG, unquote. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 916. Manafort replied to Kilimnik's July 29th email, quote, Tuesday, August 2nd, is best. Tuesday or Weds in NYC, unquote. Footnote 917. 3 days later, on July 31, 2016, Kilimnik flew back to Kiev from Moscow, and on that same day wrote to Manafort that he needed, quote, about 2 hours, unquote, for their meeting, quote, because it is a long caviar story to tell, unquote. Footnote 918. Kilimnik wrote that he would arrive at JFK on August 2nd at 7:30 p.m., and he and Manafort agreed to a late dinner that night. Footnote 919. Documentary evidence, including flight, phone, and hotel records, and the timing of text messages exchanged, footnote 920, confirms the dinner took place as planned on August 2nd, footnote 921. As to the contents of the meeting itself, the accounts of Manafort and Gates, who arrived late to the dinner, differ in certain respects, but their versions of events, when assessed alongside available documentary evidence and what Kilimnik told business associate Sam Patton, indicate that at least three principal topics were discussed. First, Manafort and Kilimnik discussed a plan to resolve the ongoing political problems in Ukraine by creating an autonomous republic in its more industrialized eastern region of Donbas, footnote 922, and having Yanukovych, the Ukrainian president ousted in 2014, elected to head that republic, footnote 923. That plan, Manafort later acknowledged, constituted a, quote, backdoor, unquote, means for Russia to control eastern Ukraine, footnote 924. Manafort initially said that, if he had not cut off the discussion, Kilimnik would have asked Manafort in the August 2nd meeting to convince Trump to come out in favor of the peace plan, and Yanukovych would have expected Manafort to use his connections in Europe and Ukraine to support the plan. Footnote 925. Manafort also initially told the office that he had said to Kilimnik that the plan was crazy, that the discussion ended, and that he did not recall Kilimnik asking Manafort to reconsider the plan after their August 2nd meeting. Footnote 926. Manafort said, redaction, grand jury, that he reacted negatively to Yanukovych sending, years later, an, quote, urgent, unquote, request when Yanukovych needed him. Footnote 927. When confronted with an email written by Kilimnik on or about December 8, 2016, however, Manafort acknowledged Kilimnik raised the peace plan again in that email. Footnote 928. Manafort ultimately acknowledged Kilimnik also raised the peace plan in January and February 2017 meetings with Manafort. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 929. Second, Manafort briefed Kilimnik on the state of the Trump campaign and Manafort's plan to win the election. Footnote 930. That briefing encompassed the campaign's messaging and its internal polling data. According to Gates, it also included discussion of battleground states, which Manafort identified as Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Minnesota. Footnote 931. Manafort did not refer explicitly to battleground states in his telling of the August 2nd discussion. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 932. Third, according to Gates and what Kilimnik told Patton, Manafort and Kilimnik discussed two sets of financial disputes related to Manafort's previous work in the region. Those consisted of the unresolved Deripaska lawsuit and the funds that the opposition bloc owed to Manafort for his political consulting work, and how Manafort might be able to obtain payment. Footnote 933. After the meeting, Gates and Manafort both stated that they left separately from Kilimnik because they knew the media was tracking Manafort and wanted to avoid media reporting on his connections to Kilimnik. Footnote 934. C. Post-resignation activities. Manafort resigned from the Trump campaign in mid-August 2016, approximately 2 weeks after his second meeting with Kilimnik, amidst negative media reporting about his political consulting work for the pro-Russian Party of Regions in Ukraine. Despite his resignation, Manafort continued to offer advice to various campaign officials through the November election. Manafort told Gates that he still spoke with Kushner, Bannon, and candidate Trump, footnote 935, and some of those post-resignation contacts are documented in emails. For example, on October 21, 2016, Manafort sent Kushner an email and attached a strategy memorandum proposing that the campaign make the case against Clinton, quote, as the failed and corrupt champion of the establishment, unquote, and that, quote, WikiLeaks provides the Trump campaign the ability to make the case in a very credible way by using the words of Clinton, its campaign officials, and DNC members, unquote. Footnote 936. Later, in a November 5, 2016 email to Kushner entitled Securing the Victory, Manafort stated that he was, quote, really feeling good about our prospects on Tuesday and focusing on preserving the victory, unquote, and that he was concerned the Clinton campaign would respond to a loss by, quote, moving immediately to discredit the Trump victory and claim voter fraud and cyber fraud, including the claim that the Russians have hacked into the voting machines and tampered with the results, unquote. Footnote 937. Trump was elected president on November 8, 2016. Manafort told the office that, in the wake of Trump's victory, he was not interested in an administration job. Manafort instead preferred to stay on the, quote, outside, unquote, and monetize his campaign position to generate business, given his familiarity and relationship with Trump and the incoming administration. Footnote 938. Manafort appeared to follow that plan as he traveled to the Middle East, Cuba, South Korea, Japan, and China, and was paid to explain what a Trump presidency would entail. Footnote 939. Manafort's activities in early 2017 included meetings relating to Ukraine and Russia. The first meeting, which took place in Madrid, Spain, in January 2017, was with Georgi Ogunov. Ogunov, who had previously worked at the Russian embassy in the United States, was a senior executive at a Deripaska company and was believed to report directly to Deripaska. Footnote 940. Manafort initially denied attending the meeting. When he later acknowledged it, he claimed that the meeting had been arranged by his lawyers and concerned only the Pericles lawsuit. Footnote 941. Other evidence, however, provides reason to doubt Manafort's statement that the sole topic of the meeting was the Pericles lawsuit. In particular, text messages to Manafort from a number associated with Kilimnik suggest that Kilimnik and Boyarkin, not Manafort's counsel, had arranged the meeting between Manafort and Ogunov. Footnote 942. Kilimnik's message states that the meeting was supposed to be, quote, not about money or Pericles, unquote, but instead, quote, about recreating the old friendship, unquote, ostensibly between Manafort and Deripaska, quote, and talking about global politics, unquote. Footnote 943. Manafort also replied by text that he, quote, needs this finished before January 20th, unquote. Footnote 944, which appears to be a reference to resolving Pericles before the inauguration. On January 15, 2017, 3 days after his return from Madrid, Manafort emailed K.T. McFarland, who was at that time designated to be Deputy National Security Advisor and was formally appointed to that position on January 20, 2017. Footnote 945. Manafort's January 15th email to McFarland stated, quote, I have some important information I want to share that I picked up on my travels over the last month, unquote. Footnote 946. Manafort told the office that the email referred to an issue regarding Cuba, not Russia or Ukraine, and Manafort had traveled to Cuba in the past month. Footnote 947. Either way, McFarland, who was advised by Flynn not to respond to the Manafort inquiry, appears not to have responded to Manafort. Footnote 948. Manafort told the office that around the time of the presidential inauguration in January, he met with Kilimnik and Ukrainian oligarch Serhiy Yovichkin at the Westin Hotel in Alexandria, Virginia. Footnote 949. During this meeting, Kilimnik again discussed the Yanukovych peace plan that he had broached at the August 2nd meeting and in a detailed December 8, 2016 message found in Kilimnik's DMP email account. Footnote 950. In that December 8th email, which Manafort acknowledged having read, footnote 951, Kilimnik wrote, quote, All that is required to start the process is a very minor wink or slight push from DT, unquote, an apparent reference to President-elect Trump, quote, and a decision to authorize you to be a special representative and manage this process, unquote. Kilimnik assured Manafort with that authority he, quote, could start the process and within 10 days visit Russia, Yanukovych guarantees your reception at the very top level, unquote, and that, quote, DT could have peace in Ukraine basically within a few months after inauguration, unquote. Footnote 952. As noted above, redaction, grand jury, and statements to the office, Manafort sought to qualify his engagement on and support for the plan. Redaction, grand jury, including footnotes 53, 54, and 955. On February 26, 2017, Manafort met Kilimnik in Madrid, where Kilimnik had flown from Moscow. Footnote 956. In his first two interviews with the office, Manafort denied meeting with Kilimnik on his Madrid trip, and then, after being confronted with documentary evidence that Kilimnik was in Madrid at the same time as him, recognized that he met him in Madrid. Manafort said that Kilimnik had updated him on a criminal investigation into so-called, quote, black ledger, unquote, payments to Manafort that was being conducted by Ukraine's National Anti-Corruption Bureau. Footnote 957. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 958. Manafort remained in contact with Kilimnik throughout 2017 and into the spring of 2018. Those contacts included matters pertaining to the criminal charges brought by the office, footnote 959, and the Ukraine peace plan. In early 2018, Manafort retained his longtime polling firm to craft a draft poll in Ukraine, sent the pollsters a three-page primer on the plan sent by Kilimnik, and worked with Kilimnik to formulate the polling questions, footnote 960. The primer sent to the pollsters specifically called for the United States and President Trump to support the Autonomous Republic of Donbass with Yanukovych as prime minister, footnote 961. And a series of questions in the draft poll asked for opinions on Yanukovych's role in resolving the conflict in Donbass, footnote 962. The poll was not solely about Donbass. It also sought participants' views on leaders apart from Yanukovych as they pertain to the 2019 Ukrainian presidential election. The office has not uncovered evidence that Manafort brought the Ukraine peace plan to the attention of the Trump campaign or the Trump administration. Kilimnik continued his efforts to promote the peace plan to the executive branch, for example, the U.S. Department of State, into the summer of 2018. Footnote 963.
B. Post-election and transition period contacts. Trump was elected president on November 8, 2016. Beginning immediately after the election, individuals connected to the Russian government started contacting officials on the Trump campaign and transition team through multiple channels, sometimes through Russian Ambassador Kislyak, and at other times through individuals who sought reliable contacts through U.S. persons not formally tied to the campaign or transition team. The most senior levels of the Russian government encouraged these efforts. The investigation did not establish that these efforts reflected or constituted coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia in its election interference activities. 1. Immediate post-election activity. As soon as news broke that Trump had been elected president, Russian government officials and prominent Russian businessmen began trying to make inroads into the new administration. They appeared not to have pre-existing contacts and struggled to connect with senior officials around the president-elect. As explained below, those efforts entailed both official contact through the Russian embassy in the United States and outreaches sanctioned at high levels of the Russian government through business rather than political contacts. 1A. Outreach from the Russian government. At approximately 3 a.m. on election night, Trump campaign press secretary Hope Hicks received a telephone call on her personal cell phone from a person who sounded foreign but was calling from a number with a D.C. area code. Note 964. Although Hicks had a hard time understanding the person, she could make out the words, Putin call. Note 965. Hicks told the caller to send her an email. Note 966. The following morning, on November 9th, 2016, Sergei Kuznetsov, an official at the Russian embassy to the United States, emailed Hicks from his Gmail address with the subject line, Message from Putin. Note 967. Attached to the email was a message from Putin in both English and Russian, which Kuznetsov asked Hicks to convey to the president-elect. Note 968. In the message, Putin offered his congratulations to Trump for his electoral victory, stating that he looked forward to working with Trump on leading Russian-American relations out of crisis. Note 969. Hicks forwarded the email to Kushner asking, Can you look into this? Don't want to get duped, but don't want to blow off Putin. Note 970. Kushner stated in congressional testimony that he believed that it would be possible to verify the authenticity of the forwarded email through the Russian ambassador, whom Kushner had previously met in April 2016. Note 971. Unable to recall the Russian ambassador's name, Kushner emailed Dmitry Symes of CNI, whom he had consulted previously about Russia. See Volume 1, Section 4.A.4, Supra, and asked, What is the name of Russian ambassador? Note 972. Kushner forwarded Symes' response, which identified Kislyak by name, to Hicks. Note 973. After checking with Kushner to see what he had learned, Hicks conveyed Putin's letter to transition officials. Note 974. 5 days later, on November 14, 2016, Trump and Putin spoke by phone in the presence of transition team members, including incoming National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Note 975. 1B. High-level encouragement of contacts through alternative channels. As Russian officials in the United States reached out to the president-elect and his team, a number of Russian individuals working in the private sector began their own efforts to make contact. Peter Avin, a Russian national who heads Alpha Bank, Russia's largest commercial bank, described to the office interactions with Putin during this time period that might account for the flurry of Russian activity. Note 976. Avin told the office that he is one of approximately 50 wealthy Russian businessmen who regularly meet with Putin in the Kremlin. These 50 men are often referred to as oligarchs. Note 977. Avin told the office that he met on a quarterly basis with Putin, including in the fourth quarter, Q4, of 2016, shortly after the U.S. presidential election. Note 978. Avin said that he took these meetings seriously and understood that any suggestions or critiques that Putin made during these meetings were implicit directives and that there would be consequences for Avin if he did not follow through. Note 979. As was typical, the 2016 Q4 meeting with Putin was preceded by a preparatory meeting with Putin's chief of staff, Anton Vino. Note 980. According to Avin, at his Q4 2016 one-on-one meeting with Putin, note 981, Putin raised the prospect that the United States would impose additional sanctions on Russian interests, including sanctions against Avin and/or Alpha Bank. Note 982. Putin suggested that Avin needed to take steps to protect himself and Alpha Bank. Note 983. Avin also testified that Putin spoke of the difficulty faced by the Russian government in getting in touch with the incoming Trump administration. Note 984. According to Avin, Putin indicated that he did not know with whom formally to speak and generally did not know the people around the president-elect. Note 985. Avin, redaction, grand jury, told Putin he would take steps to protect himself and the Alpha Bank shareholders from potential sanctions, and one of those steps would be to try to reach out to the incoming administration to establish a line of communication. Note 986. Avin described Putin responding with skepticism about Avin's prospect for success. Note 987. According to Avin, although Putin did not expressly direct him to reach out to the Trump transition team, Avin understood that Putin expected him to try to respond to the concerns he had raised. Note 988. Avin's efforts are described in Volume 1, Section 4.B.5, Infra. 2. Kirill Dmitriev's transition-era outreach to the incoming administration. Avin's description of his interactions with Putin is consistent with the behavior of Kirill Dmitriev, a Russian national who heads Russia's sovereign wealth fund and is closely connected to Putin. Dmitriev undertook efforts to meet members of the incoming Trump administration in the months after the election. Dmitriev asked a close business associate who worked for the United Arab Emirates UAE Royal Court, George Nader, to introduce him to Trump transition officials, and Nader eventually arranged a meeting in the Seychelles between Dmitriev and Eric Prince, a Trump campaign supporter and an associate of Steve Bannon. Note 989. In addition, the UAE National Security Advisor introduced Dmitriev to a hedge fund manager and friend of Jared Kushner, Rick Gerson, in late November 2016. In December 2016 and January 2017, Dmitriev and Gerson worked on a proposal for reconciliation between the United States and Russia, which Dmitriev implied he cleared through Putin. Gerson provided that proposal to Kushner before the inauguration, and Kushner later gave copies to Bannon and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. A. Background. Dmitriev is a Russian national who was appointed CEO of Russia's Sovereign Wealth Fund, the Russian Direct Investment Fund, RDIF, when it was founded in 2011. Note 990. Dmitriev reported directly to Putin and frequently referred to Putin as his boss. Note 991. RDIF has co-invested in various projects with UAE sovereign wealth funds. Note 992. Dmitriev regularly interacted with Nader, a senior advisor to UAE Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed. Crown Prince Mohammed, in connection with RDIF's dealings with the UAE. Note 993. Putin wanted Dmitriev to be in charge of both the financial and the political relationship between Russia and the Gulf states, in part because Dmitriev had been educated in the West and spoke English fluently. Note 994. Nader considered Dmitriev to be Putin's interlocutor in the Gulf region and would relay Dmitriev's views directly to Crown Prince Mohammed. Note 995. Nader developed contacts with both U.S. presidential campaigns during the 2016 election and kept Dmitriev abreast of his efforts to do so. Note 996. According to Nader, Dmitriev said that his and the government of Russia's preference was for candidate Trump to win and asked Nader to assist him in meeting members of the Trump campaign. Note 997. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 998. Nader did not introduce Dmitriev to anyone associated with the Trump campaign before the election. Note 999. Redaction, grand jury, including notes 1000 through 1004. Eric Prince is a businessman who had relationships with various individuals associated with the Trump campaign, including Steve Bannon, Donald Trump Jr., and Roger Stone. Note 1005. Prince did not have a formal role in the campaign, although he offered to host a fundraiser for Trump and sent unsolicited policy papers on issues such as foreign policy, trade, and Russian election interference to Bannon. Note 1006. After the election, Prince frequently visited transition offices at Trump Tower, primarily to meet with Bannon, but on occasion to meet Michael Flynn and others. Note 1007. Prince and Bannon would discuss, inter alia, foreign policy issues, and Prince's recommendations regarding who should be appointed to fill key national security positions. Note 1008. Although Prince was not formally affiliated with the transition, Nader, redaction, grand jury, received assurances, redaction, grand jury, that the incoming administration considered Prince a trusted associate. Note 1009. B. Kirill Dmitriev's post-election contacts with the incoming administration. Soon after midnight on election night, Dmitriev messaged redaction, investigative technique, who was traveling to New York to attend the 2016 World Chess Championship. Redaction, investigative technique, Dmitry Peskov, the Russian Federation's press secretary, who was also attending the World Chess Championship. Note 1010. Redaction, investigative technique. Note 1011, 1012, 1013. At approximately 2:40 a.m. on November 9th, 2016, news reports stated that candidate Clinton had called President-elect Trump to concede. At redaction, investigative technique, note 1014, wrote to Dmitriev, Putin has won. Note 1015. Later that morning, Dmitriev contacted Nader, who was in New York, to request a meeting with the key people in the incoming administration as soon as possible in light of the, quote, great results, unquote. Note 1016. He asked Nader to convey to the incoming administration that, quote, we want to start rebuilding the relationship in whatever is a comfortable pace for them. We understand all of the sensitivities and are not in a rush. End quote. Note 1017. Dmitriev and Nader had previously discussed Nader introducing him to the contacts Nader had made within the Trump campaign. Note 1018. Dmitriev also told Nader that he would ask Putin for permission to travel to the United States, where he would be able to speak to media outlets about the positive impact of Trump's election and the need for reconciliation between the United States and Russia. Note 1019. Later that day, Dmitriev flew to New York, where Peskov was separately traveling to attend the chess tournament. Note 1020. Dmitriev invited Nader to the opening of the tournament and noted that if there was, quote, a chance to see anyone key from the Trump camp, unquote, he, quote, would love to start building for the future, unquote. Note 1021. Dmitriev also asked Nader to invite Kushner to the event so that he, Dmitriev, could meet him. Note 1022. Nader did not pass along Dmitriev's invitation to anyone connected with the incoming administration. Note 1023. Although one World Chess Federation official recalled hearing from an attendee that President-elect Trump had stopped by the tournament, the investigation did not establish that Trump or any campaign or transition team official attended the event. Note 1024. And the president's written answers denied that he had. Note 1025. Nader stated that Dmitriev continued to press him to set up a meeting with transition officials, but was particularly focused on Kushner and Trump Jr. Note 1026. Dmitriev told Nader that Putin would be very grateful to Nader and that a meeting would make history. Note 1027. Redaction, grand jury. Note 1028. 1029. According to Nader, Dmitriev was very anxious to connect with incoming administration and told Nader that he would try other routes to do so besides Nader himself. Note 1030. Nader did not ultimately introduce Dmitriev to anyone associated with the incoming administration during Dmitriev's post-election trip to New York. Note 1031. In early December 2016, Dmitriev again broached the topic of meeting incoming administration officials with Nader in January or February, note 1032. Dmitriev sent Nader a list of publicly available quotes of Dmitriev speaking positively about Donald Trump, quote, in case they were helpful, unquote, note 1033. C. Eric Prince and Kirill Dmitriev meet in the Seychelles. 1. George Nader and Eric Prince arrange Seychelles meeting with Dmitriev. Nader traveled to New York in early January 2017 and had lunchtime and dinner meetings with Eric Prince on January 3, 2017. Note 1034. Nader and Prince discussed Dmitriev. Note 1035. Nader informed Prince that the Russians were looking to build a link with the incoming Trump administration. Note 1036. Redaction, grand jury. He told Prince that Dmitriev had been pushing Nader to introduce him to someone from the incoming administration. Redaction, grand jury. Note 1037. Nader suggested, in light of Prince's relationship with transition team officials, that Prince and Dmitriev meet to discuss issues of mutual concern. Note 1038. Redaction, grand jury. Prince told Nader that he needed to think further about it and to check with transition team officials. Note 1039. After his dinner with Prince, Nader sent Prince a link to a Wikipedia entry about Dmitriev and sent Dmitriev a message stating that he had just met, quote, with some key people within the family and inner circle, unquote, a reference to Prince, and that he had spoken at length and positively about Dmitriev. Note 1040. Nader told Dmitriev that the people he met had asked for Dmitriev's bio, and Dmitriev replied that he would update and send it. Note 1041. Nader later received from Dmitriev two files concerning Dmitriev. One was a two-page biography, and the other was a list of Dmitriev's positive quotes about Donald Trump. Note 1042. The next morning, Nader forwarded the message and attachments Dmitriev had sent him to Prince. Note 1043. Nader wrote to Prince that these documents were the versions, quote, to be used with some additional details for them, unquote, with them referring to members of the incoming administration. Note 1044. Prince opened the attachments at Trump Tower within an hour of receiving them. Note 1045. Prince stated that while he was at Trump Tower that day, he spoke with Kellyanne Conway, Wilbur Ross, Steve Mnuchin, and others while waiting to see Bannon. Note 1046. Cell site location data for Prince's mobile phone indicates that Prince remained at Trump Tower for approximately 3 hours. Note 1047. Prince said that he could not recall whether, during those 3 hours, he met with Bannon and discussed Dmitriev with him. Note 1048. Redaction, grand jury. Note 1049. Prince booked a ticket to the Seychelles on January 7, 2017. Note 1050. The following day, Nader wrote to Dmitriev that he had a pleasant surprise for him, namely that he had arranged for Dmitriev to meet a special guest from the new team, referring to Prince. Note 1051. Nader asked Dmitriev if he could come to the Seychelles for the meeting on January 12, 2017, and Dmitriev agreed. Note 1052. The following day, Dmitriev sought assurance from Nader that the Seychelles meeting would be worthwhile. Note 1053. Redaction, grand jury. Dmitriev was not enthusiastic about the idea of meeting with Prince, and that Nader assured him that Prince wielded influence with the incoming administration. Note 1054. Nader wrote to Dmitriev, quote, this guy, Prince, is designated by Steve Bannon to meet you. I know him, and he is very, very well connected and trusted by the new team. His sister is now a minister of education. End quote. Note 1055. According to Nader, Prince had led him to believe that Bannon was aware of Prince's upcoming meeting with Dmitriev, and Prince acknowledged that it was fair for Nader to think that Prince would pass information on to the transition team. Note 1056. Bannon, however, told the office that Prince did not tell him in advance about his meeting with Dmitriev. Note 1057. 2. The Seychelles meeting. Dmitriev arrived with his wife in the Seychelles on January 11, 2017, and checked into the Four Seasons Resort, where Crown Prince Mohammed and Nader were staying. Note 1058. Prince arrived that same day. Note 1059. Prince and Dmitriev met for the first time that afternoon in Nader's villa, with Nader present. Note 1060. The initial meeting lasted approximately 30 to 45 minutes. Note 1061. Redaction, grand jury, including note 1062. Prince described the 8 years of the Obama administration in negative terms and stated that he was looking forward to a new era of cooperation and conflict resolution. Note 1063. According to Prince, he told Dmitriev that Bannon was effective, if not conventional, and that Prince provided policy papers to Bannon. Note 1064. Redaction, grand jury, including note 1065, 1066, 1067, 1068. The topic of Russian interference in the 2016 election did not come up. Note 1069. Redaction, grand jury, including note 1070. Prince added that he would inform Bannon about his meeting with Dmitriev, and that if there was interest in continuing the discussion, Bannon or someone else on the transition team would do so. Note 1071. Redaction, grand jury, including note 1072. Afterwards, Prince returned to his room, where he learned that a Russian aircraft carrier had sailed to Libya, which led him to call Nader and ask him to set up another meeting with Dmitriev. Note 1073. According to Nader, Prince called and said he had checked with his associates back home and needed to convey to Dmitriev that Libya was off the table. Note 1074. Nader wrote to Dmitriev that Prince had, quote, received an urgent message that he needs to convey to you immediately, end quote, and arranged for himself, Dmitriev, and Prince to meet at a restaurant on the Four Seasons property. Note 1075. At the second meeting, Prince told Dmitriev that the United States could not accept any Russian involvement in Libya because it would make the situation there much worse. Note 1076. Redaction, grand jury, including note 1077. After the brief second meeting concluded, Nader and Dmitriev discussed what had transpired. Note 1078. Dmitriev told Nader that he was disappointed in his meetings with Prince for two reasons. First, he believed the Russians needed to be communicating with someone who had more authority within the incoming administration than Prince had. Note 1079. Second, he had hoped to have a discussion of greater substance, such as outlining a strategic roadmap for both countries to follow. Note 1080. Dmitriev told Nader that, redaction grand jury, Prince's comments, redaction grand jury, were insulting, redaction grand jury. Note 1081. Hours after the second meeting, Prince sent two text messages to Bannon from the Seychelles. Note 1082. As described further below, investigators were unable to obtain the content of these or other messages between Prince and Bannon, and the investigation also did not identify evidence of any further communication between Prince and Dmitriev after their meetings in the Seychelles. 3. Eric Prince's meeting with Steve Bannon after the Seychelles trip. After the Seychelles meetings, Prince told Nader that he would inform Bannon about his discussion with Dmitriev and would convey that someone within the Russian power structure was interested in seeking better relations with the incoming administration. Note 1083. On January 12, 2017, Prince contacted Bannon's personal assistant to set up a meeting for the following week. Note 1084. Several days later, Prince messaged her again, asking about Bannon's schedule. Note 1085. Prince said that he met Bannon at Bannon's home after returning to the United States in mid-January and briefed him about several topics, including his meeting with Dmitriev. Note 1086. Prince told the office that he explained to Bannon that Dmitriev was the head of a Russian sovereign wealth fund and was interested in improving relations between the United States and Russia. Note 1087. Prince had on his cell phone a screenshot of Dmitriev's Wikipedia page dated January 16, 2017, and Prince told the office that he likely showed that image to Bannon. Note 1088. Prince also believed he provided Bannon with Dmitriev's contact information. Note 1089. According to Prince, Bannon instructed Prince not to follow up with Dmitriev, and Prince had the impression that the issue was not a priority for Bannon. Note 1090. Prince related that Bannon did not appear angry, just relatively uninterested. Note 1091. Bannon, by contrast, told the office that he never discussed with Prince anything regarding Dmitriev, RDIF, or any meetings with Russian individuals or people associated with Putin. Note 1092. Bannon also stated that had Prince mentioned such a meeting, Bannon would have remembered it, and Bannon would have objected to such a meeting having taken place. Note 1093. The conflicting accounts provided by Bannon and Prince could not be independently clarified by reviewing their communications, because neither one was able to produce any of the messages they exchanged in the time period surrounding the Seychelles meeting. Prince's phone contained no text messages prior to March 2017, though provider records indicate that he and Bannon exchanged dozens of messages. Note 1094. Prince denied deleting any messages, but claimed he did not know why there were no messages on his device before March 2017. Note 1095. Bannon's devices similarly contained no messages in the relevant time period, and Bannon also stated he did not know why messages did not appear on his device. Note 1096. Bannon told the office that during both the months before and after the Seychelles meeting, he regularly used his personal BlackBerry and personal email for work-related communications, including those with Prince, and he took no steps to preserve these work communications. Note 1097. D. Kirill Dmitriev's post-election contact with Rick Gerson regarding U.S.-Russia relations. Dmitriev's contacts during the transition period were not limited to those facilitated by Nader. In approximately late November 2016, the UAE National Security Advisor introduced Dmitriev to Rick Gerson, a friend of Jared Kushner who runs a hedge fund in New York. Note 1098. Gerson stated he had no formal role in the transition and had no involvement in the Trump campaign other than occasional casual discussions about the campaign with Kushner. Note 1099. After the election, Gerson assisted the transition by arranging meetings for transition officials with former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair and a UAE delegation led by Crown Prince Mohammed. Note 1100. When Dmitriev and Gerson met, they principally discussed potential joint ventures between Gerson's hedge fund and RDIF. Note 1101. Dmitriev was interested in improved economic cooperation between the United States and Russia and asked Gerson who he should meet with in the incoming administration who would be helpful towards this goal. Note 1102. Gerson replied that he would try to figure out the best way to arrange appropriate introductions, but noted that confidentiality would be required because of the sensitivity of holding such meetings before the new administration took power and before cabinet nominees had been confirmed by the Senate. Note 1103. Gerson said he would ask Kushner and Michael Flynn who the key person or people were on the topics of reconciliation with Russia, joint security concerns, and economic matters. Note 1104. Dmitriev told Gerson that he had been tasked by Putin to develop and execute a reconciliation plan between the United States and Russia. He noted in a text message to Gerson that if Russia was, quote, approached with respect and willingness to understand our position, we can have major breakthroughs quickly, end quote. Note 1105. Gerson and Dmitriev exchanged ideas in December 2016 about what such a reconciliation plan would include. Note 1106. Gerson told the office that the transition team had not asked him to engage in these discussions with Dmitriev and that he did so on his own initiative and as a private citizen. Note 1107. On January 9, 2017, the same day he asked Nader whether meeting Prince would be worthwhile, Dmitriev sent his biography to Gerson and asked if he could, quote, share it with Jared or somebody else very senior in the team so that they know that we are focused from our side on improving the relationship, and my boss asked me to play a key role in that, end quote. Note 1108. Dmitriev also asked Gerson if he knew Prince and if Prince was somebody important or worth spending time with. Note 1109. After his trip to the Seychelles, Dmitriev told Gerson that Bannon had asked Prince to meet with Dmitriev and that the two had had a positive meeting. Note 1110. On January 16, 2017, Dmitriev consolidated the ideas for U.S.-Russia reconciliation that he and Gerson had been discussing into a two-page document that listed five main points. 1. Jointly fighting terrorism. 2. Jointly engaging in anti-weapons of mass destruction efforts. 3. Developing win-win economic and investment initiatives. 4. Maintaining an honest, open, and continual dialogue regarding issues of disagreement. And 5. Ensuring proper communication and trust by key people from each country. Note 1111. On January 18, 2017, Gerson gave a copy of the document to Kushner. Note 1112. Kushner had not heard of Dmitriev at that time. Note 1113. Gerson explained that Dmitriev was the head of RDIF, and Gerson may have alluded to Dmitriev's being well connected. Note 1114. Kushner placed the document in a file and said he would get it to the right people. Note 1115. Kushner ultimately gave one copy of the document to Bannon and another to Rex Tillerson. According to Kushner, neither of them followed up with Kushner about it. Note 1116. On January 19, 2017, Dmitriev sent Nader a copy of the two-page document, telling him that this was, quote, a view from our side that I had discussed in my meeting on the islands and with you and with our friends. Please share with them. We believe this is a good foundation to start from, end quote. Note 1117. Gerson informed Dmitriev that he had given the document to Kushner soon after delivering it. Note 1118. On January 26, 2017, Dmitriev wrote to Gerson that his boss, an apparent reference to Putin, was asking if there had been any feedback on the proposal. Note 1119. Dmitriev said, quote, we do not want to rush things and move at a comfortable speed. At the same time, my boss asked me to try to have the key U.S. meetings in the next 2 weeks if possible, end quote. Note 1120. He informed Gerson that Putin and President Trump would speak by phone that Saturday and noted that that information was very confidential. Note 1121. The same day, Dmitriev wrote to Nader that he had seen his boss again yesterday, who had, quote, emphasized that this is a great priority for us and that we need to build this communication channel to avoid bureaucracy, end quote. Note 1122. On January 28, 2017, Dmitriev texted Nader that he wanted, quote, to see if I can confirm to my boss that your friends may use some of the ideas from the two-pager I sent you in the telephone call that will happen at 12 EST, end quote. Note 1123. An apparent reference to the call scheduled between President Trump and Putin. Nader replied, quote, definitely paper was so submitted to team by Rick and me. They took it seriously, end quote. Note 1124. After the call between President Trump and Putin occurred, Dmitriev wrote to Nader that, quote, the call went very well. My boss wants me to continue making some public statements that U.S. Russia cooperation is good and important, end quote. Note 1125. Gerson also wrote to Dmitriev to say that the call had gone well, and Dmitriev replied that the document they had drafted together, quote, played an important role, end quote. Note 1126. Gerson and Dmitriev appeared to stop communicating with one another in approximately March 2017, when the investment deal they had been working on together showed no signs of progressing. Note 1127. 3. Ambassador Kislyak's meeting with Jared Kushner and Michael Flynn in Trump Tower following the election. On November 16, 2016, Catherine Vargas, an executive assistant to Kushner, received a request for a meeting with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. Note 1128. That same day, Vargas sent Kushner an email with the subject, missed call, colon, Russian Ambassador to the U.S., Sergei Ivanovich Kislyak. Note 1129. The text of the email read, Ray, setting up a time to meet with you on 12-1. LMK, how to proceed. Kushner responded in relevant part, I think I do this one. Confirm with Dmitry Symes of CNI that this is the right guy. Note 1130. After reaching out to a colleague of Symes at CNI, Vargas reported back to Kushner that Kislyak was, quote, the best go-to guy for routine matters in the U.S., end quote, while Yuri Ushakov, a Russian foreign policy advisor, was the contact for, quote, more direct, substantial matters, end quote. Note 1131. Bob Forsman, the UBS investment bank executive who had previously tried to transmit to candidate Trump an invitation to speak at an economic forum in Russia, see Volume 1, Section 4.A.1.D.2, Supra, may have provided similar information to the transition team. According to Forsman, at the end of an early December 2016 meeting with incoming National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and his designated deputy, K.T. McFarland, in New York, Flynn asked Forsman for his thoughts on Kislyak. Forsman had not met Kislyak, but told Flynn that while Kislyak was an important person, Kislyak did not have a direct line to Putin. Forsman subsequently traveled to Moscow, inquired of a source he believed to be close to Putin, and heard back from that source that Ushakov would be the official channel for the incoming U.S. National Security Advisor. Note 1133. Forsman acknowledged that Flynn had not asked him to undertake that inquiry in Russia, but told the office that he nonetheless felt obligated to report the information back to Flynn, and that he worked to get a face-to-face meeting with Flynn in January 2017, so that he could do so. Note 1134. Email correspondence suggests that the meeting ultimately went forward, note 1135, but Flynn has no recollection of it or of the earlier December meeting. Note 1136. The investigation did not identify evidence of Flynn or Kushner meeting with Ushakov after being given his name. Note 1137. In the meantime, although he had already formed the impression that Kislyak was not necessarily the right point of contact, note 1138, Kushner went forward with the meeting that Kislyak had requested on November 16th. It took place at Trump Tower on November 30th, 2016, note 1139. At Kushner's invitation, Flynn also attended. Bannon was invited but did not attend. Note 1140. During the meeting, which lasted approximately 30 minutes, Kushner expressed a desire on the part of the incoming administration to start afresh with U.S.-Russian relations. Note 1141. Kushner also asked Kislyak to identify the best person, whether Kislyak or someone else, with whom to direct future discussions, someone who had contact with Putin and the ability to speak for him. Note 1142. The three men also discussed U.S. policy towards Syria, and Kislyak floated the idea of having Russian generals brief the transition team on the topic using a secure communications line. Note 1143. After Flynn explained that there was no secure line in the transition team offices, Kushner asked Kislyak if they could communicate using secure facilities at the Russian embassy. Note 1144. Kislyak quickly rejected that idea. Note 1145. 4. Jared Kushner's meeting with Sergei Gierkov. On December 6, 2016, the Russian embassy reached out to Kushner's assistant to set up a second meeting between Kislyak and Kushner. Note 1146. Kushner declined several proposed meeting dates, but Kushner